Welcome to the RCGP podcast on contraception in the times of COVID-19. The world has changed so much in the last few months, it's almost difficult to remember how we did things before. I'm here with Anne Connolly. Anne is a gypsy in gynaecology in Bradford, as part of which she's a hysteroscopist, and she's also the RCGP Women's Health Clinical Champion. We're going to be discussing how we can safely deliver contraceptive services in these unusual times. Thank you for joining us, Anne.
Oh, good morning.
Maybe we should start by talking about the patient who wants contraception for the first time. How would you approach such a consultation?
It's a great question and something that probably we wouldn't do any different than if we were seeing somebody face to face in the first part of that consultation. We have to remember that during this time, we are anticipating a spike in conception rates, and there has already been seen a spike in abortion rates. So it's a really important consultation to be having at the moment, especially as we start to see the lockdown rules relax. So firstly, I'm not going to spend a long time doing this because it's such a short podcast, but it's about what she wants, what she knows, all the things that we would normally go through. And then the important part of doing this remotely is to be thinking about contraception safety. So we all know the Faculty of Sexual and Reproductive Health has some good guidelines on what the contraceptive options are, and they are open to everybody to access. But the most important of those is, of course, the UK MEC, the UK Medical Eligibility Criteria, which is the safety Bible. So the top lines are, when you're talking to somebody about contraception remotely, it's about what is safe for her to use if you can't actually see her. Now, combined hormonal contraception is probably the one we've been most used to giving over the years, and one women often know about, but it isn't as safe as the progesterone-only methods. So if we can check that she has no medical contraindications, and the main ones are, has she ever had any blood clots, DVT, VTE risk? Does she have any cardiovascular risks? What is her BMI? Do we have an up-to-date BMI? Do we have an up-to-date blood pressure recorded? Even if it's been done in the last 12 months, that's probably okay. Is she a smoker aged over 35? Those big risks against giving combined hormonal contraception. And if we have any concerns at all about her medical safety, or we don't have access to the information that we need, and then using something like the desogestrel-only pill, the progestogen pill, is safe for virtually everybody. In fact, the only people who can't rely on the progestogen-only pill are people who are taking enzyme inducers. If she really can't take it every day, and there are tricks and tips to remind her that, or if she's got active breast cancer, that's something that she shouldn't take. But otherwise, just giving desogestrel pill to any woman who comes in, who is on the phone wanting contraception, even just to start while we're thinking about other ways she can get a more longer acting, is very safe. Obviously, we need to be thinking about advising about emergency contraception. So if she does have any time she forgets the pill, or she starts having sex before getting hold of it, or she's already had unprotected sex, then think about emergency contraception and safe sex messages, condom use, especially if she's got a new partner or she's changing partner. There's some great information out there. Sexwise, the FPA website has updated their resources in COVID times. And there's also another great website called Contraception Choices, where you can look at the different methods and make your own choices in an informed way.
Thank you very much. I think we're all getting used to doing things on the phone that we didn't used to. And it's quite reassuring to know that contraception can safely be done on the phone. Just to make things a bit trickier, this patient's 17 and she lives at home with her parents, and she says that they will go absolutely nuts if they find contraceptive pills at home. And in any case, she's pretty sure that she'll forget to take them. And she's been talking to her friends. Some of them have got implants and she wants to think about something she can fit and forget. So normally we'd be going, great, yes, we want to give you a lark. You're the perfect person for this. But what about fitting larks now?
Another fantastic question. The main point about doing phone calls remotely around sexual health and contraception particularly the youngsters, is to make sure we know they're safe. And is there any coercion? Is there any risk to them? We're seeing that there's plenty of news about the concerns about domestic violence and coercion increasing. So I would always open this conversation with, are you alone? Are you able to talk? Something that gives her an opportunity to give a yes, no answer, because it'd be very easy to pick up quickly any concerns if there are any. Then we need to be thinking about where we can access LARC, and is it available in our own area? We've seen the Sexual and Reproductive Health Services reduce their availability and access over the last few months since COVID times, although we know they are starting to increase their service provision again. So it's either about whether or not she could have a LARC that we could fit in our own service, if that's something that we offer, or if we can signpost her to somewhere where she could get that method fitted for her. As usual, with any fitting of LARC, we need to be making sure that she's safe from COVID risk. So we're protecting our staff, protecting her, as we do with any patient that we're seeing at the moment. But give her the information about LARC, start her on something, progesterone-only pill, give it to her online so she can start something at the moment, if that's possible. But getting access to implants or intrauterine devices is really important. And I know lots of services, including my own, and I suspect yours, Tony, are already doing this.
Yes, absolutely. I think I fitted my first implant last week since COVID has happened, because, as you see, you know, we do need to be getting back to this sort of thing. So thank you. That's really useful to think about the kind of broader context of what we might do and how we might do it safely. Let's come on now to a patient who is already on a LARC method, but it needs changing. So this might be a woman with a 3-year-old implant or a 5-year-old Marina or another intrauterine device coming to the end of its life. What should we do for that patient?
So the Faculty of Sexual and Reproductive Health have issued some guidance for contraception use during COVID times. And what they have produced is sufficient evidence to show that several of the LARC methods have a longer efficacy than we have previously used. The studies are small, but in all the studies that they have demonstrated and evidenced, there are no pregnancies for extended use. Now, it's important to look at each method individually. So the contraceptive implant we've been using for 3 years, but there is sufficient evidence to suggest that can be extended for 4 years. You need to have a conversation with the woman about whether she could take any risk of having a pregnancy. And if she says absolutely none, then leaving the implant and adding in a progesterone-only pill, such as a desogestrel pill, on top of the implant would be sufficient. And again, we can do that remotely without needing to do blood pressures, BMIs, etc. If she has an intrauterine device, a copper intrauterine device, and it is one of the banded ones, and I think most of us use those these days, so something like the T-Safe copper 380A, Quickload, which we have said would do for 10 years, there's good evidence to show that that will last for 12 years. So again, we don't need to be rushing to change just at the moment. Now, the intrauterine systems, so that's the progestogen-containing intrauterine devices, are all different, and the rules are different for each one. So it's important to understand which type she has. If she has the JDES, which is a 3-year device, it is still a 3-year device. If she has Kylena, which is a 5-year device, then that is still a 5-year device. So if she is using one of those and they're coming to the end of the time, then sending her some desogestrel pills to cover her for now would be sufficient until we can change the device. Now, the 52-milligram devices, so this is the Mirena or Levocert, they are for 5 years for contraception. And the recommendation is these can probably be left for 6 years for contraception. Again, you could have that discussion with the woman, and if she's not happy with taking any risk, then you could add in a desogestrel pill, or she could continue to use that device for 6 years. We must always remember that if the Mirena is being used as part of her HRT, then she should she can only use it for 5 years for HRT. And if it is 5 years and due to be changed, then it's important to add in a to change the HRT from estrogen only plus a Mirena to a continuous combined preparation of HRT and leave the Mirena for the time being.
Thank you very much. It's really useful to know that there's a bit of breathing space. And I think that differentiation between the Mirena for contraception for HRT is really important. So moving on to other methods, thinking about the depo, I have to say that I use much less depo than I ever did. It seems quite a lot less popular since the implant was available. And I've actually never prescribed Cyanopress, the subcutaneous depo, because there doesn't seem to be a massive amount of demand for it. But I wondered if it might become more popular because it's something that patients can self-administer at home.
So Depo-Provera is still a very popular method of contraception. I think we've had some very confusing methods of messages about how long you can leave it for, but don't forget that depo is okay and still effective up to 14 weeks. So look at your practice policy because it is a good time to change that if it hasn't allowed that extra time up until now. Evidence there, faculty of sexual and reproductive health guidelines supports that. Some practices are doing the risk assessment, as we do with any patient that we're seeing. Are they okay? Is anyone in the family ill, etc., etc., and bringing people in to have their depo. But we have seen an increase in the use of Cyanopress over this time, and I think it's a good time for us to be talking about that option. So Cyanopress is basically depo, but in a uniject, and that can be given subcutaneously. Now, it's a method we could and should be using anyway, particularly in women who are overweight, because it gets into the subcutaneous tissues, whereas depo often doesn't. So lots of practices are already quite used to using Cyanopress. But Cyanopress is something that can be self-administered. There are some good videos on YouTube or on the website Cyana Answers for clinicians to understand how to use this, and also for women to watch to decide if it's something that they might be interested in giving themselves. The video can be watched in real time so that you can actually go through the process as it is being shown on the video so that you can make sure that you use the device as it should be used. But women are moving on to Cyanopress, and previously we've brought them in to show them how to use this, but we know that some women are very happy just to do it themselves for the first time by watching a video. So think about Cyanopress as an option for some women. Obviously, women who are using Cyanopress end up with a sharp, so you need to be either using your pharmacy to get hold of a small sharps container, or you can get them from Medisa, which we use for other resources.
That's great. Thank you. It might be something that I start prescribing a bit more now that I'm more comfortable with it. You alluded briefly to emergency contraception earlier. Are there any changes we should be making for emergency contraception with respect to the COVID-19 situation?
I think we just need to be much more proactively asking about the need for emergency contraception, particularly for younger women who may have had unprotected sex, who aren't telling us because they think they're going to be in trouble, because obviously we're still meant to be social distancing. So we need to make sure that we are aware about emergency contraceptive needs and we're non-judgmental, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think there's any changes. Certainly we know that copper intrauterine devices are by far the most effective method of intrauterine contraception. We need to know where women can get hold of that, get one inserted, and all SRH services are meant to have been continuing to have an emergency contraception service for fitting of intrauterine devices. If you aren't fitting them yourself and you can't bring someone in, and that would be her preferred option, help her find out where the clinic access is, because it may be a bit harder for people to find. And give her a hormonal method in the meantime, just in case she changes her mind. We know lots of women do that in normal times, and at the moment that may be exacerbated. When we're thinking about the other two methods of emergency contraception, the oral methods, we have uniprystal acetate or levonorgestrel. And I think the decision is exactly the same as it's always been. Remember that UPA is twice as effective as Levonel all the way through the cycle. UPA is good for everybody, other than if you've got severe asthma, breastfeeders. You do have to remember that UPA interacts with other hormonal methods. So if she's there for missed pills and she's taken them within the previous 7 days, it's important that she quick starts within the next 5 days, then levonorgestrel is the better option. Otherwise, I use UPA pretty much all the time. Don't forget to quick start. So if she is there and we're on the phone and she's telling me she's had unprotected sex and I've made the decision, or she's made the decision, we've made the decision between us, if you're giving her LR1, quick starter with progesterone only pills, but she'll have to wait 5 days before starting them, or give 11L and quick start on that day. If you're quick starting, it's always good to recommend a pregnancy test in 3 weeks' time, to just make sure that she wasn't pregnant and that the method did work for her. That's the biggest risk. We know that starting progesterone only pills in early pregnancy won't affect the outcome of a pregnancy if she was then going to continue with a pregnancy if that had already happened. Also, don't forget about STI risk. If she's had unprotected sex, she's put herself at risk of STIs, possibly. We've got our ways of doing self-taken swabs. So you could either post one to her, get her to come to reception to pick one up, or lots of local areas are now using online access to swabs. So signpost her that way. But the test that she does for that unprotected sex a couple of days ago does need to be done at least 3 weeks afterwards, because otherwise you'll get a possibly false negative result. So think STIs, think quick starting, and really, I don't think it's changed emergency contraceptive advice.
Thank you very much. That's really useful. And I think it's a really important point that if someone plans to have a copper IUCD fitted later today or tomorrow, to give them the hormonal contraception as well, because we all know that people forget or don't turn up or change their minds. So our services are now really all called sexual and reproductive health, but I remember the days when they were called family planning, and people do still come to see us in general practice to plan their family. They come to see us when they're thinking about conceiving, either to have their long-acting method removed or for general advice. What would you advise someone who's thinking about conceiving at the moment?
That's a great question. The Faculty of Sexual and Reproductive Health, they've got a web page with some advice on this, and the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynaecology, they also have guidance both for clinicians and also for patients. It's uncertain times, so women are concerned or may be concerned and wanting this advice, so it's worth having a look so that you can be up to date as well with the recommendations. Flu-type illnesses are never great for women who are pregnant, and COVID-19 is a flu-type illness and may cause significant problems in a few women, but the majority will probably only have mild symptoms. There is no current opinion. The current opinion is there's no increase in risk of miscarriage or fetal abnormality, but COVID is still a new problem. And so we haven't got the longer term evidence to support that. But at the moment, it doesn't look as though there will be problems with the outcome of the pregnancy. Antenatal care is changing. There will be less face-to-face antenatal care. Scans continue as normal. But actually, the contact with the midwife may be like it is with us, virtually rather than face-to-face. If she has other risk factors when she is pregnant, such as obesity, diabetes, or COPD or asthma, then obviously that puts her in a higher risk group again. LARC removal, it's not a priority for conception. So if she has a LARC method, we probably should be saying continue with it for the time being. Let's just get a bit more evidence. Let's just get a bit more access. But at the end of the day, it's the woman's choice. Faculty do say this may not be the best time to stop contraception to plan a family. That's their bottom line. but that has to be individually weighed out for different women, because say a woman who is 40 and is wanting to get pregnant, she doesn't necessarily have the same luxury of time as a woman who is 25 wanting to plan a family at some point. So as ever, it's an individual conversation and we're still learning.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's completely correct. Women often maybe come to us wanting certainty, and we have to be able to say, well, here's the information. We can't give you that certainty. You've got to use that to make up their own minds, which is something we're pretty good at doing in primary care. I think that's all we're going to cover today. Thank you very much, Anne, for providing such a detailed run through of all the things we need to know about contraception in these unusual times. And I hope you stay well. Everyone out there, thank you very much for listening and stay safe. This was the RCGP podcast on contraception in the times of COVID.